Did I hear a little Carmen Miranda in there? You bet we did. It was wonderful, Paul. Thanks. Intelligent people all over the world are beginning to realize that being a God-fearing person just doesn't make any sense anymore. And neither does believing that God rewards some and punishes others. This doesn't make sense either. These same people have also stopped believing that human beings are flawed by nature, born in sin, with sin on their souls, and bound for hell until certain prerequisites are met. Now, not all people believe that the human race has such a lowly place in the scheme of things. Some of us believe that human beings are made out of divine stuff and that we are destined to experience the nature of the divine while we're living this very life. I am thoroughly convinced that you and I were created to experience the nature of the divine mentally, spiritually, physically, and emotionally, and in every way possible. I'm convinced of this, and I'm sure you are as well, or at least you're moving in the direction of being convinced. I'm using the month of January to debunk some false ideas about God and man by using the first four chapters of our primary text, The Science of Mind. I'll go on to prove during this month that you are not now, nor have you ever been flawed, and you do not occupy a lowly place in the scheme of things. In fact, you are heir to the loftiest place in the universe. You're not only without flaw, but you are the highest expression of life, perfect, life whole, life complete. And the only thing that you're bound to is being what you already are, a sacred being designed to experience and express your greatness in your own way. I think it's great that we're in a religion that allows us to take whatever it presents and then express it in our own way, rather than being told by someone, anyone, the way we should express our relationship to God. Now, Dr. Ernest Holmes formulated the science of mind by putting all of what he had learned in his lifetime together in one work. He called that work a book that's named The Science of Mind. He formed a religion out of that whole concept called religious science. And he, of course, wrote many other books. But over the years, the science of mind became the primary text because though the other books are wonderful, this thing called you, this thing called life, and many others, the science of mind seems to contain the basics of our teaching. You know, when Dr. Holmes started this whole thing of putting the science of mind together, he formulated something that took the form of what was then called the Religious Science Institute of Philosophy. It was not called, and he didn't want it called, a church. He believed that the word church was tied to too many orthodox ideas, and he wanted to be free of those, so he needed to not call it a church, he called it the Institute. But it became a church because a minister by the name of Carmelita Trowbridge, thereabouts in Monterey Park, once went up to Ernest and said, "Dr. Holmes, I must tell you that all of your proponents, all the people that you've taught to go out in the world and start this teaching to help people everywhere, meet on a Sunday morning. We all pray, we sing some of those old-fashioned hymns, and most importantly, we get a tax deduction from being a church. Don't you want to change it from the Institute to a church?" And he said, under pressure, he said, "All right." But it's interesting, when he was asked to speak for the very first time, at Founders Church, he got up, and it was considered the biggest church religious science had at that time. He got up to the podium and he said, "This wasn't my idea." Isn't it interesting that he had the guts to say that in front of the minister whose idea it was? But he said, "This wasn't my idea." Well, I believe that what we call the organization is important. That's why we have moved from calling our organization a church to calling it a center. Because I think it also frees us up to teaching the science of mind in a clear, precise way rather than dragging along the dead corpse of ideas that we may have grown up with. Well, all religions attempt to answer some pretty fundamental questions. What's the meaning of life? Is there a God? And if there is a God, what is man's relationship to God? And there are probably as many answers to these questions as there are religions. There are religions that are based on accepting the Bible as the literal word of God, adhered to at all costs, and religions that invite the individual to interpret what exists in the Bible in their own way. Dr. Holmes liked the Bible. He had a particular take on the Bible, and I'd like to reveal what that take was. I'm going to read what he said. "You know, the Christian religion gives more value to the individual life than do most other religions. That is why it has such an appeal to the more vital races of the world. In many respects, the Christian Bible is the greatest book ever written, and does truly point a way to eternal values, but it is only one explanation and cannot be considered the only light on religion. For there are many others whose combined teaching weave the story of truth." Well, he didn't believe that the Bible that I grew up with, I don't know if you did, was the only vehicle for truth. I believe, and I'm sure you do too, that the truth that we have come to accept expresses itself in many ways. Religious science is a culmination of many teachings that were combined by Dr. Holmes to tell the story of truth. I think that all religions attempt to reveal the truth about the relationship that man has with God, man both male and female has with God. In other words, all religions reveal the truth as they believe it to be. And we respect and honor all religions for that reason. And the reason people choose a church or a religion, one church or religion over another, is because of the way the truth is being disseminated by that church or by that religion. Dr. Holmes addresses the subject of this very phenomenon, asking the question, what is man's relationship to God, in the very first chapter of his book, The Science of Mind, when he says, now get this, he doesn't start talking about the estate that God has in the universe and then the fact that God created man to represent what God, he doesn't go into that. He just simply says, there is a depth and a meaning to your own being, and if you can discover it will answer all your questions. That to me is so freeing spiritually. It's interesting that when answering the question, what is man's relationship to God, Dr. Holmes has us look into ourselves for the answer, not into the Bible, not into even his books, unless we realize that his books expose what this relationship is. But he's not suggesting we continue reading the Science of Mind textbook. In the textbook, he says, look within yourselves. Now, therein lies the tale. Therein lies the teaching called Science of Mind, a story that leads us on a path to ourselves. And I think that's what all religions should do. And maybe in a way that's what all religions do, and maybe a circuitous route, but nonetheless to the individual. They take us home back to the foundations of our own existence. What's more important than your existence? Nothing. Every individual comes to the place hopefully, where they realize the most important thing in their lives is themselves, their own mind, the way they're dealing with everything. And if every person could realize this, what a wonderful world this would be. Because then we would realize that every person had a decided interest in the evolution of this entire existence we call life. The truth and meaning of life speaks through everything, if we would just listen. It speaks through different philosophies, different cultural traditions. It speaks through self-analysis and the wisdom handed down from generation to generation. And everything that is awakened in us really awakens the fact that there's something within us that knows. It may not be able to articulate what it knows, but there's something in us with know that knows the depth and meaning of our own being. And As I said, we might not be able to articulate exactly what that is. I certainly couldn't when I first started out in the science of mind, and I'm becoming a little better at it. Now that I see that the depth of meaning of my own being is really my identity in God. For that identity allows me to transcend everything in my life. The good things and the bum things, the good times and the bum times. The sicknesses, the health, everything I've ever had, everything I've never known, knowing that God within me or tapping that God or just becoming somewhat aware that there's something in me that's transcendent of all my experiences in life, allow me to feel better about my life in this time, in this moment. Well, there was Animal Kingdom show on yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, but there were three zebras that this woman found in the jungle, and two of them were babies, and one was a little older, and they were left by their parents to die, and she didn't know why, but she took all three zebras in, and she dealt with them, and the one zebra had so bonded to her that I am the mother of this zebra. And that's what, indeed, our animals can think of us as, yes, alpha dog in our surroundings. The way she dealt with those three zebras, the love that those three zebras showed her, the way she showed her love to those, it was so touching to me. And I'm sure had you seen it, you would be as touched. Well, you might be touched anyway. I don't know. I know I am. By that relationship. I brought it up in my class last Wednesday, how many people have animals, and what is your relationship with your animals? Because we usually create a hierarchy of relationships, and maybe that's the way it should be. But you know, the more you understand the breadth and depth and meaning of your inner self, the more you're able to love everything. Animals, trees, the mountains, this city, other people, and maybe even yourself. Because you're tapping something that's universal in you, something that allows all of us to love in a bigger way, to express and experience life in a bigger way. Probably the greatest counsel ever given to man, both male and female, was given by Socrates when he said, "Know thyself," a simple admonition. Know thyself. But know thyself can be interpreted in many ways. It can mean know your limitations, know what you can do and what you can't do, know where the boundaries in your life are, know what your faults are, your frailties are, and your weaknesses are, and don't you forget it. But it can mean something far more inspiring, can it? It can mean know thyself, can also mean know yourself, as the transcendent power of the universe. You see, if I feel that the real self of me is unappealing, unlikable, unlovable, and not able to affect much change in my life, let alone the world, basically because it's inadequate, I probably will not want to get to know the depth and meaning of this self very well. But if I know or even suspect that the real self of me, through all the trials and tribulations of my life, all the ups and downs of my life, has always been a transcendent power for good, then, I will probably be at least curious about the depth and meaning of my own being. It's so easy to spend a certain amount of, a lifetime really, ignoring the depth and meaning of your own being, thinking that what's important is understanding this or that or him or her. When it's getting in touch with the depth and meaning of your own being, and sometimes when I just say these words, the depth and meaning of my own being, it causes me to get real serious about myself. Now, this is a personal thing. You may have a different reaction to those words. But what does it cause me to do? I'll share it with you. And I've already said it in one sense. It causes me to look at the things that I'm not proud of and to be able to look straight at them and say, so what? God in me is bigger than what I'm not proud of. What I've not said, what I've not done, my experience of life. Now, that's true about you. The depth and meaning of your inner self is bigger than anything that you might not be proud of. It allows you to look straight at it, straight in the eye, and say, so what? Rather than succumb and feel that the rest of your life is going to be paying off the debt you owe to the universe by having said or done something. Emerson refers to this independent self, transcendent self, as that thing in us that sits in smiling repose, not forcing us to know it, not accepting it. So when you think about going into the depth and meaning of your very being, realize that that meaning isn't trying to force you to accept it. It doesn't know whether you accept it or not because it's so busy being itself. There's a part of you which is busy being who you really are. That part is the part that at your memorial, whenever it happens, will sail through the universe. I got sort of a kick out of the email I sent to everyone because I said, let's soar through the universe together, and I spelled soar, S-O-R-E. And someone said, came up with some smart-ass remark, I don't remember what it was, and commented on it. But I thought, well, it's done. It's gone. It's out in the ethers. But you know what I meant. Can we actually soar through this lifetime? Can you soar through this day? Can you actually do that? Yeah. But there's only one way, by discovering the depth and meaning of your own being, not by discovering what's an e-ticket and what's an, I don't know, do they still have that Disneyland, the e-tickets? No, or whatever they do. Think you can go on everything you want as many times as you want. Sort of like life, isn't it? Well, I've often thought of Disneyland as life. Point simply is, if I'm going to soar through this universe, S-O-A-R, just to prove that I can spell it, then I've got to do something to myself. I've got to realize that I have the ability to soar. To soar like an eagle rather than live with the turkeys. But how many turkeys are there in your life because you haven't decided to soar? There might be a few. You might be one of them. I've been a turkey in my life. What's a turkey? How does he define it? Well, someone that just plods along close to the ground, not expecting much and knowing that not much is going to happen. The new year's starting. How much is going to happen? How much are you going to cause? How much are you willing to soar in your own mind and soar by going inside to the depth and meaning of your very life? Are you actually living the life of God consciously or you're not? Science of Mind is the study of discovering a self that transcends all conditions, a self that is capable of creating new ones. That's a pretty wonderful self, I would say. You know, we all need to amount to something. And that need is strong in all people. And there's a reason why the need to amount to something is there in you and in me, and that's because we do amount to something already. Something far more important than most religions would have us believe. Dr. Holmes starts to reveal the depth and meaning of our own being in a chapter he calls, his first chapter, The Thing Itself. When he makes this simple statement, which says the whole story, God in man, as man, is man. Now, that may seem like an extreme statement to some of us, but it's the basis from which we work. God in man, as man is man. God and man, the same thing. He calls this God the thing itself. It's often referred to, he even tells us, as God or mind or spirit. But each one defines a different aspect of this thing itself. For instance, God refers to a perfect creative power that is infinite, intelligent, and eternal. And I think it's smart to use the word God every so often because it taps into a transcendent power that we may have thought of as a man up in the skies. Well, we're still going to use the word God, but we're going to identify God as an inner presence within our own mind. Mind refers to a thinking mechanism that uses its intelligence to think and create by thinking. The word spirit refers to the invisible link between all things, and if we put them all together, the thing itself is, or amounts to, an invisible intelligence that can create by means of its thought. That's you, or what I've come to call the initiating power of the universe, because that's what all those other words add up to, the initiating power of the universe. That's what you find when you plunge into the depth and meaning of yourself, of your own being. The initiating power of the universe, not only your initiating power, but the answer to the universe, that one initiating power exists in you. The answer then to the questions, what is the meaning of life? Is there a God? And if there is, what's man's relationship to God, can be found in that simple statement, God in man, as man is man. Therefore, I can say, God in me, as me, is me. Now, we hesitate to say, I am God, because we don't want anyone to think that we think that we created this planet, that we created everything on it, that we hold the system of all planets in the palm of our mental hands. We don't want anyone to think that. But, and not only do we not want anybody to think that, but it's not true. We didn't create the planet, but we're a part of the power that did. We get to share in its magnificence, its power. And if we don't think of something that's able to hold this universe together as a power, we're missing the point. But where is that power? In our own minds. Where in our own minds? In our conscious awareness. In other words, yes, there is a God, and that God lives in you, and your relationship to that God can be found in your relationship to yourself. You can't have a good relationship to God and a lousy estimate of yourself. It just doesn't go. In the old religions, it would work, not in this one, because Ernest Holmes tells us that your relationship with yourself is your relationship to your higher power. If you honor it, respect it, and know it's your power, you can use it for a highest expression of God, of life. But if you denigrate it by denigrating yourself, then it will never become to you what it could. Well, what more is there to know? As I said, the initiating power exists in your conscious mind, which means that the thing itself, the essential life essence, exists within the very thing that can think about it. Where? Your conscious mind. Interesting that it put itself at the center of our conscious mind. Someone once said it put itself where we'd least expect to find it, in our conscious minds. And I think that's true. And that's why we've spent so many years as a species looking outside of ourselves, looking into the heavens to find God, when in reality, that God is within the thing that's looking. What you're looking for, it's been said, is what you're looking with. Well, why then do we exist? The answer is simple. If I am the initiating power of the universe, I exist to initiate expressions of life that please me. Really? Now, that's going to sound a little self-centered to some people, but that's why we're here, to please ourselves. Could it be any other way? Doesn't it please you and everyone you know to be healthy, to have more money, to do what you want to do, to love and be loved, to help people, to make the world a better place? Of course it does. If all of these things please us, we shouldn't apologize for wanting to experience them. And we don't. The old theology suggested that our destiny lies in the hands of something outside of ourselves. The new religion, the new theology suggests that our destiny lies within our own minds. The destiny that you're about to walk into in the year 2008 will be created by your use of your mind. The same is true of me, your conscious mind. Why conscious mind? Because to deliberately cause something, to deliberately create something, we have to be conscious of what we're creating. Because our minds are one with the great mind, the power we have comes from that great mind. And that power can be found only in one place, our conscious awareness. This means that we have to stop thinking the thoughts that initiate experiences we no longer want and start thinking the thoughts that initiate experiences that we do want. Boy, it's that simple. Think of it. It's that simple, just changing your thought. And last week I talked about an NPR show that I had seen that simply said when mind and or brain tells itself that it doesn't have to think a certain thought, it usually doesn't. Because before that point, mind assumed that it couldn't help but think a certain thought. That's the way I was raised. That's what everybody thinks. But don't let everybody do your thinking for you. You can think as an individual. In fact, that's why you were created as an individual, to think as an individual. The race mind has many ideas that are wonderful, but it also holds a lot of frightening ideas. This time of year when people talk about the flu going around and this going around, is it going around you? Well, depends on what you think. If you are proud of the fact that you only get the flu, I heard someone says it only lasts for 3 months. 3 months? And you may say, it should be 3 days. Why is it at all? Why do we host the flu bug for a moment? If God is in us as all there is to what we represent to the universe, we don't have to accept the flu bug if we accept God. Know that God is bigger than anything going around, whether it's something at work, whether it's something at play, whether it's something in your home, no matter what it is, God in you is bigger than that something. And if you accept that God, if that's what you find in the depth and meaning of your own heart and soul, you're free of any limitation. The only doctrine that science of mind has is that every person has the power to determine their own experience. The old theology was filled with prohibitions and restrictions and a belief that the thing itself existed only up in the sky, and that an intimate relationship with it was only available to certain people, special people, sacred people, spiritual people. Well, I don't qualify for any of those, do you? I was talking to someone this morning about the ministry, and that one said, well, I'm not sure I could go into the ministry simply because I'm so imperfect, or words to that effect. I said, do you think I'd be standing at this podium if I were not imperfect? In fact, I think that's why Jesus hung around with all the people of suspect. Isn't that a nice way to put it? People of suspicious origins. Because he wanted to show people that the regular guys can be spiritual too. In fact, I think the regular guys are ones, like you and me, are ones that put on no pretense. We're everyday people, plodding the streets of everyday LA. As spiritual beings that accept the divine presence within them and know that the depth and meaning of their heart and soul is equal to what everybody has. Well, we hope that these people would share what this relationship with God was like with us. We were taught to pray to this thing, but we were never quite sure if our prayers would be answered, simply because we thought of God as a person subject to moods, and we were never sure what mood God was in when we were praying to Him. Now, We pray as the power called God, conscious of itself, no longer asking for something, but rather knowing that our word causes it to happen. That's what we get to do if we're a part of the creative power called mind. We no longer wonder, is God angry with me? Does God hold something against me? If any of these fit, don't raise your hand. Just know that I've researched it. Is God refusing to forgive me for something? Maybe I was a mistake and God doesn't like to do favors for mistakes. Maybe I've offended God beyond redemption. And maybe God just got tired of me always asking for something. Or maybe it's just my turn to suffer. My number was up and there it is. Instead of asking these questions, we ask, how much can I embody? Now that I'm beginning to discover the depth and meaning of my own being, how much can I embody? Now that we know that we're one with or one in the mind of God, how much of life can we embrace? It's a good way to start the new year. You were created to experience what's going on in your own mind, of course. You were created to believe in yourself, of course, whether someone else does or doesn't believe in you, of course. And think of yourself as a sacred being on an individual path of your own self-created destiny, knowing that no one gives to you but yourself and no one takes away from you but yourself. You're as spiritual as you'll ever be, as sacred as you'll ever be, and as remarkable as you will ever become. Dr. Holmes once thought about all of this, and on a Sunday at Founders, he said, "In these days, a young man's attitude toward what he calls religion, which is actually old theology, isn't unreasonable. It is the age of the atom, supersonic flight, television, and fabulous experience in ESP, an existence on an angry God on a throne up in the sky will frustrate genius, frighten children, and make disbelievers out of our brightest young men and women." How intuitive he was. Listen then, when the depths of your being start to talk to you. Listen to what it's saying. Listen to what it's telling you to forgive. Listen to what it's telling you how to approach a certain situation or a certain person. It's a loving presence, and it's never going to ask you to stand with that throne in your hand, not throne in your hand, but with a gavel in your hand and pronounce judgment on someone else. Listen when it speaks to you. It'll speak to you in a way that only you can understand. I think it's time to surrender the deep attachment we may have had to that old God, the God that never was, and realize that the only God we will ever experience is within us. And it's a wonderful God. Use the supremacy of that God in your own mind to meet the new year. You are the thing itself. You're the initiating power of the universe. So decide to be more conscious of God's presence in your mind than you have ever been before. Will you covenant with me?
Yes.
I'll ask it again. Will you covenant with me?
Yes.
To be more conscious of God in your mind no matter what's happening.
Yes.
Let your relationship with yourself be filled with love. And may 2008 be the best year in your life. I thank you.